Welcome to this message from Kings Harbor Church. We are so glad you're here. If you're interested in learning more about us, make sure to check out kingsharbor.org. We really hope this message serves to help you find and follow Jesus better.
If you got a Bible, go to John chapter 15. We'll be there in just a moment. As you turn there, I'll just tell you a story. I love Thanksgiving. And my family loves Thanksgiving. Like, Thanksgiving is a big deal. Now, what you have to know is that my family is large. And so I have two older sisters. My oldest sister has five kids. And then my middle sister has two kids. And then, so even like just all the adults and the kids in the house, my parents' house isn't large. And so we're squeezing into every seat or empty space that we can find in the house to eat together. But because you have that many people and Thanksgiving is that big a deal, like, everybody's responsible for contributing in some way. Now, seeing as dead animals would refuse to eat my cooking, I cannot contribute by making something. So my role is that I go to Golden Corral and I buy rolls from the bakery because their rolls are amazing. And I've done this year after year. And I say I buy, I take my mom's money and I go purchase on her behalf. But I'm driving the mileage, so I think it counts. And so when I get there, it's usually the same people working there. And typically the lady that takes my order is a lady who speaks Spanish. And so here's how our conversation usually goes. I walk up and I say, hey, I'm here to pick up 3 dozen rolls. And she'll motion for me to hand her the ticket. And she'll give me she'll put up one finger saying, hey, wait a minute. She'll walk off. She'll bring the boxes back. I'll say thank you. And then it's over. But for whatever reason, one year as this was going on, I told her, hey, I'm here to pick up 3 dozen rolls. She motioned for the ticket, told me one moment. She came back. I handed her the money to pay. She said, gracias. And something inside of me said, today's the day. I'm going to respond in Spanish. Now, you need to know, the level of my Spanish is like Duolingo lesson one when you just open up the app. And so I was like, de nada. Which, if you don't know, that's what you're supposed to say. Yeah. But what happened was, oh, you know Spanish. And so she just then began to have a conversation with me that she was really excited about. And then I was just like. And so then I just said, gracias, and ran out the door. And I say that to you because there are times where you like start a conversation that you have no right being in. And I say that because through the Easter season, we started a conversation about gardening, and I was up front with you. I know nothing. And yet many of you have proceeded to have gardening conversations with me that have had me standing here like, I don't know. I have no idea. But two of those conversations have actually been really immensely helpful for my soul. One of them, a dear sister pulled me aside and talked about that at her house right outside of her kitchen. She has a fig tree, and every year there's this cutting down of the leaves and the branches of the fig tree that almost make it look like it's dead. And then this hope, this belief, and this understanding that it's going to sprout up again, and when it does, it's more fruitful and more beautiful than it was before they cut it down. The second, I was having a conversation, and a woman pulled me aside and said, I used to have this wild grapevine in my backyard. And it was beautiful. Like, if you've ever seen grape leaves in full bloom, they were tremendous. It was awesome. I was proud of this. And she said, but it actually wasn't bearing any fruit. So she's like, so I had to go and I had to begin to prune it and cut it back and cut against it. And as I did that, when the next season, it began to bloom and it began to produce grapes, and it's produced grapes ever since. And then she said to me, and as I was doing that, the Lord said, I'm doing the same thing to you. And the reason I bring that up is this morning, I think as much as we're talking about fighting the appearances of looking like we're in full bloom but not having fruit, or understanding that Jesus took the curse that was supposed to be upon us when he was on the tree, or even understanding that the resurrection of Jesus means that he's cultivating a new garden that's going to reshape the world, all of that is true. But if we don't understand where our fruitfulness comes from, if we don't know how to abide in him, then we will actually never produce any fruit, no matter how much we hold our breath and try. So here's our main idea. Jesus describes a condition of deep trust and connection to him as abiding. However, abiding takes more than sentimentality. It requires courage. And so here's our table of contents. In verses 1-3, we're just going to look at the pain of fruitfulness. In verses 4-7, we're going to look at the revelation of helplessness. And then in verses 8 through 11, we're going to look at the delight of obedience. And as you read through that, you're like, I don't like the combination of these words together. It's not my fault. Let's pray, and then we'll jump in. Jesus, I thank you. I thank you that you desire to be near to us, to be connected to us. And that, Lord, even in the midst of that, there will be moments when we feel the pruning, the cutting, the taking away. But it's better to be with you and experience that than to have none of that and think that we're alive when we're really not. And so, Jesus, I pray down in the depths of our souls that you would provide this assurance, this courage for us to abide with you. It's in your matchless name I pray. Amen. John chapter 15, starting verse 1, would say this. I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. And every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, that it may bear more fruit. Already you are clean because of the word that I have spoken to you. Now, I want to give you a near context and then maybe a more broad context. And so the near context is this has literally happened just after the Last Supper, just after Jesus washing the feet of disciples, just after him saying, okay, let's go out and pray. And so many theologians think that they were walking on their way to the Garden of Gethsemane, and Jesus kind of dials into the scenery that's around him and says, hey, let me teach you something. You see this vine? I'm the true vine. But then there's a greater context to this that oftentimes when you read the scriptures, a description of Israel, the people of God, was that they were supposed to be this flourishing vine in the Lord's vineyard. And more often than not, these people who were supposed to be this flourishing vine in the Lord's vineyard were not producing faithful fruit. And oftentimes there was this conversation about cutting back or cutting away because of the lack of faithfulness and fruitfulness. Now, it's important that you see both of those things because the near context is really important because they're going from this moment of being deeply connected to Jesus and that connection, that trust, that immediate context, that immediate incidental contact with Jesus is about to be challenged and taken away. And he begins to answer, how do you deal with that reality when I'm not close to you like I used to be close to you? But then there's also this greater question of this expectation and this identity of the people of God to be producing fruit because of their connection to Jesus. And if they're not, there's something that needs to be examined. And in this small few 11 verses, Jesus answers both of those tensions, who we are and how we're supposed to be connected. And so he starts by answering the question by saying, I am the true vine. That I'm the one that's the source of your fruitfulness. That would have been important for them to hear because what that says to them in that moment is the group of people that you're a part of isn't actually the vine. Actually, that group of people that you've been a part of actually has failed over and over and over again. They have been a vine that the Lord's had to cut back. Isaiah would talk about it. Ezekiel would talk about it, that oftentimes this vine needs to be cut off and thrown into the fire. And so Jesus is saying that if you're depending on your background, your group, your strong group identity, if you're depending on that, that's not going to get it done for you. Amen. That if you're depending on the way that you've done things, your traditions, your customs, your manners, like that's actually not going to get it done for you. What's going to help you is you being deeply connected to me. I am the true vine and my Father is the vine dresser. And then he would make this statement that every branch that's in me that does not produce fruit gets cut off. And every branch that's in me that produces fruit is going to be pruned. Hold up, Jesus. So what you're telling me is that somebody's getting cut regardless. That you are cutting somebody. And maybe to understand, maybe understand a little bit, I did some studying this week about pruning. I know nothing about gardening. But I did a little bit of study because the internet does. And there's actually two levels of pruning. There's a level of pruning that's just cutting back what's dead and useless and taking up space and choking life out of what's actually alive. And maybe you've seen that. Maybe some of you, that's the entirety of your garden. Others of you, that may be just small portions of your garden. And cutting back those things and getting them out of the way actually gives room for growth, room for strength. But there's also a second level of pruning that's not pruning back what's dead and useless, but pruning back live things that are actually stealing away nutrition and stealing away life and distributing what little nutrition there may be. And so cutting back some things that could be useful, but they're hindering the fruitfulness of the branch itself. And so Jesus is making this statement that I'm going to begin to cut some things back. And maybe as you sit and listen, maybe the Lord's been doing that in your life. Maybe there's some things that when you came to Jesus, I think all of us, if you are a follower of Jesus, there's some things that you would identify that's dead, that's useless. Jesus, if you could cut that back, that would be awesome. Get that out of my life. Maybe there's that habitual sin that you're trying to get over and you can't get over. You're like, Jesus, take a chainsaw to that joker and get it out of me. But then there's the other level of pruning that's cutting back things that you're like, I thought I needed that. It's that cutting back of things that you're like, but I was kind of proud of that, Jesus. Why are you taking the knife to that? I wanted to hold on to that. Why are you cutting that back from me? And then he would say that you are already clean because of the word that I've spoken to you. And again, it's this beauty that if you are connected to the vine and what it supplies, that it is making you what you ought to be, that you are becoming clean because of the word, the teaching, the way that he declared the goodness of God to them, that he was making them clean. But even if we just stopped here, being fruitful sounds a little bit painful. And I am averse to pain. If the way that he's talking about this, that it's one thing that's like, okay, if you're not doing very well, you ought to be cut. But if you're producing fruit and I want you to be more fruitful, I'm going to cut you also. Like I didn't sign up for that. Like I thought fruitfulness was the reward that kept me from being like the people that got cut. And Jesus is saying, I'm actually promising you that there's going to be a cut either way. We'll explain how they're different in just a second. Then verse 4 would say this. Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not abide in me, he is thrown away like a branch and withers, and the branches are gathered, thrown into the fire, and burned. If you abide in me and my words abide in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. I think it's interesting, and I want you to take note that Jesus doesn't start talking about abiding until after he's got done talking about cutting. Because I think our natural tendency, because we are averse to pain, is that when cutting starts, we want to run. When challenge comes, you get this in your relationships with people who are close to you that love you and say, hey, can I talk to you about something? And then you just leave them on three dots on that text message over and over and over again. It's because we don't run towards the challenge. We don't run towards the pruning. We run from the pruning. Like, it's interesting to me that Jesus, after saying, hey, I want you to be more fruitful, and here's what it's going to require, is that I'm going to have to cut you. Here's what I've learned about life. If somebody's talking about, I'm going to cut you, run the other way. And Jesus would say, but no, you need to abide. Abiding has this language of I think it makes us feel like, you know, like it should be a magazine in Southern hospitality, that if you come into your abode and set it up for a place for people to hang out and dwell and rest, and there is this sense of rest, and there is this sense of staying, and there is this sense of dwelling, but one of the synonyms for abide is actually persist. To lean in with this level of determination that I'm not going anywhere, even if this gets difficult. And Jesus would say, there's going to be pruning, but here's how I want you to respond. Don't run. And then he would go on to say, if we don't like pain, maybe the thing that we like less than pain is helplessness. And so if I were trying to win friends and influence people, I probably wouldn't say things like, apart from me, you can do nothing. Like the way that Jesus is speaking, like this doesn't feel very sentimental. Like you're not writing this in your Mother's Day card and sending it to your mom. You should do that by tomorrow because you're running out of time. Like you're not sending, hey, without me, mom, you can do nothing. Because she's going to send that card back and say, there's a lot of things that I used to do before you, actually. You got a little too excited about that, Victoria. There's this reality that Jesus is not speaking of this touchy-feely thing, but that to understand that we are helpless. That he would say that here's what a branch can't do. A branch can't get cut off and go independently start sprouting because it has no source, it has no life in it. He's like, in fact, any branch that tries to do that, it's just not going to work. He's like, in fact, that is actually the damnation of the branch. To be cut off from me in that way is the setup for it withering, dying, and being thrown in fire. He's talking about judgment there. And then he would say, but you, if you're connected to me, you're going to bear fruit. But you also need to realize that it isn't about you. There's a book called Radical. It's by a man named David Platt. And David Platt, if you know anything about David Platt, like the Lord has built a ministry for him of being able to go into some of the toughest places, unreached places, hostile places of the gospel in the world, and go in and do a thing where he basically sits for hours on end, days on end, just opening up the Bible to underground church believers. Like, David Platt's a stud. And so if David Platt is doing his devotionals in the morning and think about his relationship with the Lord, it would not be odd for David Platt to be like, man, I've done some things. And he writes early in the book that he was in this moment of thinking about what the Lord has allowed him to do. And the Lord's comfort to him was, you know, I don't need you on my team, right? Wow. Like the tension of without me, you can do nothing. And we live in a world where we're trying often to prove how much we can be and how much we can do. And so the admission of helplessness is like admitting death. Like, we do not like feeling helpless. I'll tell you some of the conversations in my family. This is not like major helplessness. This is just first world, I'm annoyed that things don't go the way that I want them to go helplessness. And so anytime I have to stand in line at the post office and I can't make it go faster and I feel helplessness, it makes me angry. Because I feel like I should be able to move the situation. I feel like I should be able to dig into my bag and make things change. I have the agency to influence my world. And so for Jesus to say, hey, here's what being connected to me means. You recognize that without me, you can't do anything. And even saying that, there's the, yeah, but that scrolls to the back of your mind. And so I just want to do a little work in the Greek. And so when you read that in verse 5, that it says, apart from you, me, you can do nothing. I looked that up. The definition of that word is all things that fall under the word things. That's not really the definition. Some of you are like, really? Man, Greek is really fire. The point I'm trying to make to you is that he's not leaving anything out. He's not saying, well, there's some stuff you got over here. Like, and he's saying this in terms of your righteousness, your holiness, your fruitfulness and faithfulness before the Lord, that you cannot accomplish that on your own. And then it gets a little difficult for us. We understand verse 6, but verse 7 becomes squirrely because he says, if you abide in me, my words abide in you, and whatever you wish, it will be done for you. But where we debate is, so then if I pray, Jesus has to give me what I want. But you have to understand that we don't pray from a position of domination and authority over Jesus. Because if that's the way that we're trying to pray, then we don't understand verse 5, that without him, we can't do anything. That we're not praying, we don't pray in such a way where it's like, Jesus, you owe me one. Look at how connected I have been to you. I've been abiding you. I've persisted and I've stayed. I let you cut me, Jesus. You owe me some stuff. We've missed the context of the verse. And in fact, he says it this way. You don't command, you ask. So we pray from this position of humility, from this position of coming to him saying, I recognize that I can't accomplish anything without you. And then verse 3 is an important link here because he says, if you abide in me and my word is in you. And so that word that's making you clean, that's transforming your heart, that's changing you from the inside out, that it now then begins to rule your desires. And so the things that you even ask the Lord for are governed by what he's put in you. And so he would say, recognize your helplessness. That even in this, it's my good kindness that gives what you're asking for, not some merit that you've proved because you earned it. And then verses 8 through 11. By this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit and so prove to be my disciples. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. These things I've spoken to you, that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be full. Now, I want you to notice the kind of shift in language. Like before, we have a whole lot of persisting, remaining, cutting, burning. Like it's pretty gritty up to this point. And then it almost feels like it's a different person talking when you get into verse 8. Verse 8 moves in this language about glory and love and joy. That he would make this statement, that he would say that in this my Father is glorified. And so let's just talk about glory for just a second. We love glory. Back in the day when I was a kid, and you actually had to use the little TV guide channel to find out what was coming up next. Let me explain that for some of you. Back in the day, you didn't just have like built into the TV where it told you what was coming on. Like you had to go to a particular channel. And this was advanced compared to the book that you had to go buy that told you when things came on. During the Olympics, they would always show like this like long form, like, hey, the Olympics are coming. And it would talk to you about like different events, like events that you probably wouldn't spend a lot of time watching, but now you're kind of hyped up for. And I can remember going into the 96 Olympics, watching over and over again about the long jump world record and this guy that was going after it. But the way that they set it up was like the pageantry, the majesty, the glory of the long jump. I'm like, I don't know that it's that glorious. Like you run fast and jump as far as you can. Like it's not even that long of an event. But it was this beauty of accomplishing the goal, of winning the prize, of standing above everything else. And Jesus has just made the statement that for you to be fruitful means you're going to have to go through some pain. For you to be fruitful means you need to remain because you recognize how helpless you are. And here's the way that we think about these things. Okay, if I go through the pain, if I stick it through, then all of a sudden I'm going to step into this level of accomplishment and beauty. And then the first thing that he says about accomplishment and beauty is, in this, my Father gets the glory. In this, my Father's seen to be as worthy as he is. In this, my Father's seen to be as beautiful as he is. In this, my Father is set apart from everything else as being glorious and wonderful and holy and majestic and beautiful. In this, he gets glory, not you. Amen. That you would, one, produce fruit, and two, prove to be disciples. And he's already talked about how you produce fruit. You abide. You remain even when there's pain involved in that. But then he begins to answer the question, how do you prove to be disciples? He says, as my Father has loved me, I have loved you. And if you keep my commands, you abide in my love. And so he ties love to obedience. And man, we hate that. Like we hate authority, unless we have it. Back, I think like it was in 2012, there was this weird thing going on in theater and cinema where they were making movies that were like the exact same movie around the same time. So there's like a Transformers movie that came out and then like Pacific Rim. It was like big alien robots that are trying to defend and destroy the earth all at the same time. And you just couldn't tell which was which. Or at the same time, there was White House Down and Olympus Has Fallen. It's so like Olympus Fallen, you've got Gerard Butler, the guy from 300, and he's like the number one Secret Service agent protecting Morgan Freeman, who's president. Makes sense to me. And then there's White House Down, Channing Tatum and Jamie Foxx. So Magic Mike and Wanda from In Living Color as the president. And I'm not sure that that's the America I want to live in. Because who gave them right to be in control? And so there's this tension for us. When other people have control that we don't think are worthy of having control, it makes us feel like, no, I don't have to listen to what you say. And so then we evaluate rules, we evaluate commands, we evaluate statutes and policies by, are you worthy of my loyalty enough that I should listen to what you're saying? And so we don't tie obedience and love together. We tie obedience to, have you earned the right to be trusted by me? Does this rule make sense for me? Does it fit the context of my situation? And Jesus would say, you want my Father to be glorified? Trust me when it's hard and you're getting cut to produce fruit. And then prove yourself to be a disciple because you're willing to obey my commands. But recognize love came before obedience. Because he would say that in the same way the Father has loved me, I love you. Abide in my love and improve this by keeping my commands. So here's the best illustration I can give. My four-year-old, one day, it was one of those days where it was like, time out every few seconds. Like, there's a time, if you're not a parent in the room, this doesn't make as much sense, and I apologize if the illustration leads you out. But there's a portion of time where with your children, you're like, I'm going to put myself in timeout so I don't have to deal with you. It was that kind of day. And so he had just come out of timeout, and he sat down next to me on the couch, and he, like, snuggled up next to me, and I'm like, if you ask me for that snack that I just sent you to timeout for, we're going to have problems. And he said, Dada, I love you even when I'm not listening. And I'm like, give me a second, bro. And I was like, bud, I love you even when you're not listening. And it felt like in that moment, the Lord's like, that's true with me and you too, but I say it first. That I love you when you have not listened. That I love you when you have not been faithful. I love you when you have not produced fruit. But because I love you, it gives you what you need to be able to obey. You're not earning my love with your obedience. My love is already there. I love you even when you don't listen. But when you're full of my love, then there's an obedience that comes from you that brings glory to me. And then Jesus would end by saying, and when this all comes together, there's a joy that I give to you. And then your joy will be full. And so, preview of coming attractions. In the fall, we're going to take some time and we're just going to diagnose joy. And in doing that, I want to say this. There is a level of joy that's available to you that you don't have to have Jesus for. If you get the promotion on your job, there's joy in that. If your favorite team wins, there's joy in that. Like I think we shame people like, you can raise your hands for your favorite team, but you can't raise your hands for Jesus. I don't know. Like, I think it's a good grace of the Lord that he gave us teams. Maybe the good grace of the Lord will give us a team in LA next year that'll make the playoffs. We'll just see. Like, I think we can celebrate and enjoy those things. But then Jesus makes a statement that there's a joy that I provide that's like nothing else in the world, because that joy will make your joy full. Because here's the reality. We are like leaky containers when it comes to joy. So I don't know what you had for dinner last night. I don't know where you're at. Like maybe dinner last night was like that kind of, hey, what do we got in the fridge? Let's kind of throw something together and make it work. Or maybe dinner last night was, we're going to have the best meal. We're going to go out somewhere. We're going to spend some money that we probably shouldn't have spent. And as good as that meal might have been, you're going to need to eat again. And it's not like you're not going to be like, man, that steak that I had last night, I'll never eat steak again. I've reached the mountaintop. Like, you're looking for another experience. I don't know what your best vacation is. I don't know where you went. I don't know if you were like in a glass bottom hut where you could see like sharks swimming up under your boat. Freaks me out a little bit. I don't know that I would do that. I don't know if you were like up in the mountains with nothing else in creation around you. I don't know if it was like a staycation and you lied to everybody and like posted pictures from places you Googled so that way everybody would leave you alone. I don't know what your best vacation was. But what I do know is that you're gonna need to go on vacation again. What I know is that as great as that was, and as much as you imagine it, you're going to be chasing something else. Maybe you're one of those adrenaline sports people and you jump off of stuff for fun. And as much adrenaline as you had when you jumped off the last thing that wasn't made for you to jump off of, the thing that happens next is, what's the next height that I can reach? Because your joy is never full in those things. But Jesus would say that if you remain, that if you endure the pain of fruitfulness, that if you're willing to recognize your helpfulness, and if you're willing to obey because of the love that I've given to you, there's a joy that I provide that does not run empty. There's a joy that doesn't come up short. There's a joy that when everything else, because here's the other thing, as great as that vacation was, if you get a phone call from a doctor saying, hey, we've diagnosed you with something, that vacation isn't going to make it okay. But this joy that Jesus brings gives you this steadiness in your soul, even when trouble comes. And he would say, the joy that I provide for you
It makes your joy full. So here's our main idea again. Jesus describes a condition of deep trust and connection to him as abiding. However, abiding takes more than sentimentality. It requires courage. And so I just want to leave you with two quick points. Quick-ish points. Two medium points. Abiding is hard because pruning is painful. There's a difference between chainsaw and scalpels, but both of them cut and both of them hurt. Now, while chainsaws are indiscriminately removing what needs to be destroyed, a scalpel is actually doing the work of surgery, and it's cutting to heal, not cutting to destroy, but they still got to put you under anesthetic, and you're still going to be sore when it's over. And for the person that's a believer in Jesus Christ, this is not a chainsaw to your life. It's a scalpel to areas of your life that need to be cut back so that more fruitfulness can come. Here's how I know that. Because if you have trusted Jesus, there is no wrath of God left for you. And so maybe right now you're in this season and you feel like you're in pain because it feels like the Lord is cutting and he's cutting back to the bone. And you're like, why do you keep cutting? Like I can't breathe right now because of the way that you're cutting me. Like, I can't deal with this pain. What did I do wrong? The answer is not, that's the wrong question. Because if you are a believer in Jesus Christ, if you are abiding in him, if you have union with Christ, if you're connected to the Son, there's no wrath of God left for you. This is not punishment. It's the pain of fruitfulness that he's inviting you into. So abiding is hard because being pruned is painful. Back in 2019, if you're in the building, if you went out these doors that are right here to my right, you'd go into a small hallway, and then there's two meeting rooms. We call them affectionately meeting one, meeting room two and meeting room three. We were really creative on the day that we named those. And there's a little cutout in between the two rooms, so that way you have room to step, and there's actually a closet back there. And the reason that I'm giving that level of description is because I can see in my mind absolutely vividly standing in between those two doorways with Kapenna and having a conversation about things that were going on and just saying to him, I think the Lord's getting ready to prune us. Now, like, I'm not telling you, like, I saw back in 2019 that 2020 and 2021 and 2022 was coming. I didn't see any of that at all. Because if I knew that was the type of pruning that was coming, I would have ran. But what I knew is in that moment, the Lord was saying something into my heart. In 2017, when I got here, like, the Lord graced us with growth, like stupid growth, like conversations about, like, how are we gonna do this? Like, we need to hire this. We need to figure this out. We need to change this. We gotta up this. Like we were trying to figure out how to keep up with stuff. Like, there was growth that I was like, I'll just be honest with you. It was the type of growth that makes verse 5 really challenging, because I was like, well, maybe I can do a little bit Jesus. And then early 2019, I felt like the Lord kindly and sweetly said, hey, I'm going to do some pruning. I can remember sitting in elder meetings that year and said, I feel like the Lord's leading us towards some things. And if we do them, and if we lost 60% of our church and half our budget, do you believe in this enough to keep going? And to a man, every single one of them said they did. And so the reason I bring that up is because I recognize that this text was being spoke to a group of people who've united themselves to Christ, and they are saying, okay, Jesus, we'll follow you. And Jesus is saying, okay, if you're going to do that, being connected to me is going to be painful. There's going to be some pruning required, and it's going to cut you a little bit. Are you still going to abide in me? And for some of you, I just want to thank you for the courage that you've shown in a season when it's been easy to be cut back. It's been easy to fall away. It's been easy to say, this hurts way too much. I didn't sign up for this. And for some of you, that's not corporate. Some of you, that's personal. Like, the things that the Lord is walking you through, and he's showing you himself in them, but there's a lot of pain behind them. And he's saying, there's fruitfulness to come. Trust me, but we got to cut back first. And let me tell you, there's nothing wrong with praying, hey, Lord, are we there yet?
Can we get some fruit out of this thing? Because there's a whole lot of pain that I'm walking through. And let me supplement it with this. Abiding doesn't just mean staying in a difficult circumstance. Sometimes the courageous thing to do is to follow Jesus and leaving. But it's remaining in him, not remaining in the spot. And so abiding is hard because pruning is painful. Number two, abiding is hard because bearing fruit is slow. Man, I wish fruitfulness was quick. I wish it was a quick cut. Hey, I'm helpless. Man, we got an orchard. But abiding is hard because bearing fruit takes time. Maybe you see more things die than you see things come to life. Maybe you see more things cut away, and it's just like, this is not happening as fast as I thought it was going to. Abiding is hard because abiding is found in things like waking up day after day in consistency and saying, okay, Lord, I'm opening up my word because you said that you would make me clean by your word. Abiding is hard because it's found in slow things like being faithful in prayer. Abiding is hard because it's found in things like denying yourself over and over and over again. And I'll just harken back to the message that we heard from our guest last week about his friend who has family that is continually offering him this inheritance to turn away from Jesus. I wish that fruit came in the moment. I wish that when you said, okay, I'm not accepting this temptation, that the heavens would open up, that there would be some glory that would come down, that everybody would see that you are what you say that you are, and that there would be this ascension, and you'd be like, see, jokers, you should have listened to me. You don't get that. You get the opportunity to be faithful again the next day. Abiding is hard because bearing fruit is slow. And so, brothers and sisters, if you're in a season of pruning, the Lord's saying, don't run, abide. He's saying, don't quit, persist. He's saying, trust me, I know that there's pain in this journey for fruitfulness, but I'm doing something. It's not going to be as fast as you want. I love getting around people who follow Jesus for a really long time. Because what I find when I have conversations with them is that when I'm on the outside looking at their life, I'm like, man, how did you become so fervent in prayer? How did you become so consistent in the way that you approach the Lord and his word? How did you become so steady that like when everybody else is freaking out that you're rock solid? And their response is, I'm not there yet. And so I know that this is hard. And Jesus would say, that I'm with you and I love you. And then Jesus would be the example for you. Let's go back to our near context, because he was getting ready to walk into a garden to be arrested, to be tried, to be beaten, to be accused and to be mocked, to be put up on a criminal's cross, to be hung like a curse upon a tree, to have a spear cut his side. Is that nothing but the Father who loves him, pruning him? That the life of Jesus might be multiplied out, that there might be fruit for the next 2,000 years plus, because he was willing to endure the pain of that fruitfulness. So Jesus is not just advocating something to you that he thinks is a good idea. He's leading you in the way to walk in it. Pruning takes courage, and it's worth it. Let's pray. Jesus, I thank you. Thank you for your good grace towards us. I thank you that there's no fine print with you, that you up front would tell us that for us to be connected to you and be fruitful, there's going to be some pruning, and it's going to hurt, and we're going to recognize our helplessness in it. And yet there's glory for the Father, fruitfulness for the kingdom, and the fullness of joy for us. And so, Lord, I just
My eyes are closed as I pray, so I can't even see the rest of the room. But if we were going to raise our hands, I would be the first one with my hand up to say, Lord, this has hurt more than I thought it was going to. And it's not bearing fruit as quickly as I desired. And yet, if you are getting glory and you are providing joy, all I can ask is that you would give me the courage to remain. Would you give others under the sound of my voice, those watching online, the courage to remain, even when it feels like there's no fruit, especially when there's wild, beautiful growth that we could celebrate, and you're saying, yeah, but there's not fruit in that for you yet. Would you help us to not settle for the appearance of blooming when there's fruitfulness that we haven't known? Give us courage. We need you. It's in your matchless name I pray. Amen.
Thanks for listening to this message from Kings Harbor Church. If you live in the Southern California area, we would love to meet you. For more information about our service times, social media accounts, and all other resources, make sure to download our Kings Harbor Church app, which you can find wherever you download your apps. We cannot wait to meet you.